So yeah, let's talk about reproducible systems and how we can build them with Nix and with NixOS. So start by introducing myself. I'm Florian. I'm on the Nix marketing team. And with my company, Cyberus, we also do long-term support for NixOS in the name of ControlOS. I started using Nix, I think, in 2018 or 2019. I use it for my home lab. That's pretty awesome. Since I started using it, I actually know what's running there. Before that, I had some Ansible scripts, and I was never quite sure what I was doing. But for the company, we started using Nix to build software. So at the time, we were building a hypervisor, and that really helped us build the software better. And that's because Nix forces you or helps you to build your software in a reproducible way. And now the question is, why is that even important? What you often get when someone builds software is they build something and then they give it to the next person to try it out, and then things don't work anymore. And then usually a debugging session starts, and often at some point you hear, I don't know what to tell you, it worked on my machine. Since we started using Nix at Cyberus, we never heard that again. It never happened again. The other issues you get often are you use a CI, and then your CI might be, well, not really well designed, and you get a CI that where only the CI builds the stuff. That's not necessarily a problem, but it's no fun for the developers. And then you get this vicious cycle where people start using the CI as the build system instead of locally building their stuff. And then it becomes worse and worse because your CI is suddenly your bottleneck. But that's a whole other talk. And then one thing you also get when your software is not reproducible is if you have software that you need to maintain for, say, 10 years or 15 years, which you often have in an embedded space or when you need certified software, you often can't build the old version anymore in 10 years. But if you need to maintain it for 10 years, that's actually a problem. That's a security problem, and on a non-technical level, it's also increasingly a compliance problem because we have a thing called the Cyber Resilience Act in the EU that actually forces you to know what went into your software build. And these are all things that Nix helps you with, and I will tell you how in a second. But first, we'll take a look at what is this Nix thing that I'm rambling on about here. So Nix... and the naming is absolutely spectacularly bad. So naming is really hard. So Nix is a language, and a colleague of mine usually calls it, it's kind of JSON with functions. So it's a functional language. It looks a little bit like JSON, but it adds functions to it. And that language is used to describe how software packages are built. And then Nix... there's a binary, that's a build tool, and a package manager, and there's actually multiple implementations of it, and that interprets the language and then gives you software. There's also an important thing called Nix packages. That's a pretty large repository on GitHub, and it contains about 120,000 software packages that have been packaged for Nix or with Nix. And from this package repository, there's the thing called NixOS. And NixOS is a Linux distribution that uses Nix as a package manager and Nix packages as package input. All right, so how do we ensure these reproducible builds with Nix? The first thing that Nix does is forces you to declare all your dependencies. So when you think of maybe a C application that you build with Make, you would sometimes get these things where you build the software on your computer. You have a library that you depend on. It's installed via apt or whatever your distribution uses. And then your build just works. For the next person you give that software to, they might not have that library installed on their system. And then Make will scream at them. Nix takes this a step before. So if you don't put that library into your Nix file, then Nix will scream at you because Nix gives you a clean environment. So it doesn't care what's actually installed on your system. It cares about what's declared in the Nix file. And it does the same thing for access to the network. So if you want to pull something from the network during your build, you also need to declare that in the Nix file. And Nix also hashes these inputs. So when they change, Nix will also scream at you because there's a cryptographic hash. And you need to tell Nix that hash before you build the software. That all sounds, well, a little unusual maybe. And it's usually painful at first, especially if you're used to other systems. But down the road, if you would think of long-term maintenance of software, then that's really worth it because you know what you're actually building. All right. So I prepared, actually not I prepared, but a colleague and friend of mine prepared a demo that I adopted for this talk. And we'll go through a few things here. So if you want to later look at that demo, this is where you can find it. But I've also got that on the slides again. So don't worry if you didn't see it now. So what we have here is a file called flake.nix. So Nix has this concept of flakes. That's basically a description of what goes into a repository and what comes out of it. So your dependencies and your outputs. And you declare these in a flake. For this one, the inputs are pretty simple. We just depend on the Nix packages repository. So that's the one I was talking about earlier. You can put basically anything in here. These can be configuration files. So this doesn't have to be software that's packaged with Nix. And then we've got the outputs. Oh, and all these inputs are locked. So there's a flake.lock. Let me actually show you that. And this lock file here, so it's handled by Nix, but you can read it because it's just JSON. It points to the repository, it has the revision, and it also has a hash here. So if that changes without the revision changing, you would notice because Nix would scream at you. All right, so now we've got the outputs, and for this one, we start with a few variables here. So we declare that when we refer to packages here, we're talking about x86 because that's what my machine runs. And then we've got some nice variables so we don't have to type so much. So we can also build ARM64 packages. We can build static packages. And again, because we don't want to type so much, we provide a shortcut for all the packages that are declared in this flake. So these self packages are stuff that lives in this flake. The outputs in Nix are called derivations. So there's a lot of functional language limbo in Nix. And the derivation is basically, well, an output, so the software package you get once you build something. And we've got one here that just shows some concepts, not very useful. Every derivation has a name. It gets a builder. In this case, we just call a shell. And then we pass some arguments to the shell that's optional. And we just declare what system we want to build this for. So in this case, x86. These outputs go to a thing called the Nix store. We will see that in a second, so keep that in mind. And I will just build this now. So Nix build, simple. You see nothing happens. That's because I actually built this while preparing for this talk. And the build is cached, so I don't have to rebuild this again. But we can see what has happened in the log. And down there at the bottom, you see the rebuilding string that we just maybe saw in the flake. And the other thing that happens, we now have a file in our repository that's called result. And if we look at that result file, we see that it's a link that points to a file in /nix/store. So the Nix store is a place in your file system where all your builds go. And we can actually read that file again, and then we'll see the 10 that we put in there. So just to see these concepts. And the Nix store is also a little bit special because it's a read-only file system. So the only way to write to the Nix store is through the Nix commands. But I can't do this, for example, Nix store test. And this is also to ensure the reproducibility part, so that I can't just modify whatever I just built. All right, that's a simple one. Let's move on to something that's maybe more interesting. Here we have a C application. That's a Hello application that outputs some stuff. So that's the Hello application, hello.c. So it tells us what machine it was, what kind of machine it was built for, the OpenSSL version, and the compiler it was built with. And to package that, we have a file here that calls another Nix function called mk or make derivation. It gets a name. You have to specify the source. So where does the source code come from? In this case, it's just local on the file system. And we need to specify all the packages that we need for building the software, and then all the packages we need at runtime. And again, naming is hard, so I don't really like these native build inputs and build inputs names. I think they're kind of misleading. But this is what they mean. And here on the right, we see that hello thing, and we've got there the packages.call package call with the location on the file system where you find that definition I just showed you. And we can build that now. Oh, sorry. Build hello. Again, nothing happens because I did this before. But we can, again, take a look at the log. And here we see that something actually happened when I built this. And what we also see is our result file. It still exists, but now it points to a path in the Nix store. And that path is where the hello binary lives. And we can this time call that because it's a binary. So we see that in that path, we now have a bin folder and a hello binary. And we can execute that, and it tells us, oh, I was built for x86 again with an OpenSSL version and with GCC. All right. So Nix makes it easy to also build other configurations of your software. So for that hello binary, we can also build a static binary. So if we look at the one we built before, we see that there's dynamically linked libraries in there that all also live in the Nix store. And if we build a static one, hello static, we can see then that it's now not a dynamic executable. Also, we see the result link. It changed again to something else. All right. We can also build Rust packages, of course. Now we call we use the call package thing again to look at a Rust binary. And here you may have seen there's no source folder on my disk. That's because here we can actually fetch the source from GitHub. And here you see again we have a hash that makes sure that if that location on GitHub changes, that we notice. The other thing for Rust is, so Rust comes with its own package manager, Cargo. And we wouldn't want to specify the dependencies here again. That would be quite inconvenient. So for Rust, Nix actually falls back on cargo, and you just have to specify the hash of the cargo build so that, again, you notice when things change, but you don't have to put things in there twice. So we can build that again. Hello, Rust. And that works. So we see again some stuff happened with cargo here. And this is some kind of calculator with a reverse Polish notation. So that also works. All right, yeah, we can build the Rust thing static as well. Not going to do that right now. More interesting, what Nix makes really easy is cross-compilation. So when you want to compile on an x86 machine on your laptop, maybe for an ARM machine for your Raspberry Pi. Usually that's a world of pain because you have to really make sure that the environment you have on your build machine doesn't somehow leak into what you're building. But Nix already has that taken care of for you. So the only thing we need to do on Nix is specify another set of packages, the ARCH64 packages in this case, and then you can cross-compile. So this is why up here we put in this ARCH64 packages line. We're using that down here, but all the rest of the definition is the same. So this one line change makes it possible for us to compile for ARM64 here. And I can actually show you that. So now I have to specify the whole name of the output. But I can build the package for ARCH64. Oh, did I mistype that? Yeah. And so here we see that it's been using GCC for ARM64. And it also uses the ARCH64 as target. I, of course, can't run this now because that's not an ARM machine. But yeah, so Nix really makes this easy, and it also works for RISC-V. And I can also cross-compile stuff that's packaged in Nix packages, so OpenSSL, for example, with the same mechanisms. All right. Next up, dev shells. So when you build complex software, you often want some other tooling to build your software. For example, a formatter to automatically format your source code, or you have some kind of linter, or, well, you can think of a lot of things that you would want. And what you often have in traditional corporate environments is that it takes ages to onboard someone on a software project because of all the things they need to install and take care of. At CyberUS and at a lot of shops that use Nix, this is really simple because you just give people a laptop, they install their favorite IT-endorsed operating system on it, they install Nix on it, and then they get a Nix development shell. And for that development shell, you just declare everything you want that person to have access to. And so we did that here with this mk shell function that gives you a shell. And we put in here all the dependencies for our little hello program. And we put in here some development tools. There's a QEMU stuff. There are the Clang tools there. And I also put Podman in there. You'll see later why. And then we can just enter that development shell. We drop into a new shell here. And now we, for example, have Clang format. We also have some QEMU stuff in here that also has a version. And if I leave that shell, and I have to type this because it won't autocomplete, it's not there anymore. So that's the development shell. And that works because Nix has the software. So Clang Format is still on the computer. It's in the Nix store, but I can't access it because my environment doesn't let me. And then the cool thing about these development shells is if you work on multiple projects, you define a development shell in each of these projects, and you can use one version of Python in one and the other version of Python in the other, and then you can use Rust in the third one and whatever you need. And that really makes it simple to onboard developers onto a project, especially if they already know Nix, they know, or if they are on Nix OS, they know they just open the shell, Nix develop, and everything works. And you can even automate that. So there's integration with direnv, and then when you enter the directory, you're just dropped into the development shell. I didn't want to do that for the demo here because then I couldn't really demonstrate that it's gone when I exit the shell, but it's pretty easy to do. All right, so that's development shells. Nix also makes your packages really composable. So for our hello package, say we need a different OpenSSL version. We can override the original definition of the package with another dependency. In this case, it's not really useful, but the use case for this is when you have a software package and you're working on a library this software package depends on. You can override the software package with your development state of the library and then develop on that happily until you make a release. Or you can build with Clang, for example. This is also something we have here in the demo. So we can show this again, and now we see the OpenSSL version changed. It's now 3.5.5, and we're using Clang instead of GCC. And you can even do this for things that are packaged in Nix package. So this example here overrides the OpenSSL package with a patch from GitHub, and then gives us a new output that's called patched OpenSSL. This one actually doesn't work in the example right now because the patch doesn't apply anymore, so I'm not going to show that. But you can then take your patched OpenSSL version and use it as an input into your hello binary as well. All right, you can also package Python. Python is always a world of fun. And I already said, so Nix has all your stuff in the Nix store. And for Python, this makes it possible to use multiple Python versions. And you can even use these in the same output. So that's what we do down here. We have two outputs for the same Python application that were built with different Python versions. And now we build a shell script in this output where we use actually both of them. So when I do Nix build two Pythons, we can run this. And then we get a hello from Python 3.13 and right after it, a hello from Python 3.11. You wouldn't normally do this, but it's interesting that you can. All right, final Nix thing. We can also build Docker containers. And building Docker containers is really cool because people sometimes want to run Docker containers, especially if they don't have Nix OS. And the other thing is for the Nix Docker containers, they are really small because they only have the stuff in them that you put in them. And they have the same reproducibility guarantees that anything else in Nix has. So we can build the Python one again. It was called Hello Python Docker. All right, again, not much happening here because I did this before. And this is why I put Podman in the dev shell, because now I can look at the images And we can even run it. Tags are a little painful here. But you see that this also runs. If you're wondering why this was created 56 years ago, that's one of the things that Nix does for all your builds. It puts all the build dates at the start of the Linux or the Unix epoch, so 1st of January 1970. And that's, again, for reproducibility, because if your software uses dates as an input, it makes it much harder to be reproducible. And so everything that you build with Nix will be created 56 years ago, right now. Yes?
So this is basically from scratch distroless container now?
So the question was whether this is a from scratch distroless container. And yes, it is. Yeah, and so even though we have two Pythons in there, it's 300 megabytes big, and the other one you see here, so this one, this 36 megabytes one, that's the Hello image. So this one has an OpenSSL in there, and I think for something that has OpenSSL in there, that's okay to be 36 megabytes. So, yeah, that's that binary. All right, yeah, so those are our two Docker images. And now we move on from Nix, the package manager and build tool. So I already mentioned Nix packages, the collection of software that's packaged in Nix. And I think I already mentioned it's 120,000 packages. And just to give you an idea of how many that is, I brought this graph from Repology. And you see on the right side, it's very small, so it's probably can't read it. But these dots on the right side, they are all Nix packages versions. The top one is unstable. The most bottom one is from 2023. And then below that, with some distance, there's one that's the Arch user repository. And then if you're looking for your typical Linux distributions, they are all on the left there with about, well, a third of the packages. So there's Raspbian, there's Ubuntu. In the middle there, these blue dots, that's Fedora. So they all have a lot less packages. And if you look on the y-axis, that's the number of fresh packages, so the packages that are actually current. And also there, Nix packages has a lot more than the other Linux distributions. That's possible because there's a vast army of volunteers. Nix packages is one of the biggest projects on GitHub. And if you want to find a package, don't use the GitHub search. Use search.nixos.org. That actually gives you package names. All right. We can move on to NixOS then. So NixOS takes this whole idea of having a reproducible system from individual packages to complete Linux systems. So a complete laptop, for example. And if I configure my laptop with NixOS, and I have the same laptop next to it, so minus hardware dependency, I can actually move my system from one to the next. There's a question.
About Nix, do you have to switch into that development system you built before to use those Nix packages?
Do I have to switch into... So you mean, do I have to switch into the development shell to use Nix packages? Well, so if I type a command like Nix build, it will also use all the inputs that I declared in the flag file.
But to use these packages like the two Pythons, are they also links to the system you're using right now?
So in order to use the packages, I'm not sure I understand the question. So Nix uses these by default. If I want to So you mean if I want to access the Python binary? Yes, that would require the development shell. Or I have a NixOS system and where it's installed. NixOS. NixOS gives you the opportunity to configure a Linux system. And it adds two really interesting features. One is the NixOS module system. And that allows you to declaratively configure your system. So the example that's on the slide is someone's Nextcloud that I stole from GitHub. So a lot of people who use NixOS actually put their configurations on GitHub because the whole making it reproducible and declarative makes the sharing really useful. And to configure a Nextcloud in NixOS, you really only need three lines of code. You need to tell NixOS to enable the Nextcloud. You need to tell it the host name. And then you need to tell it that you want HTTPS. And if you do that, NixOS will, in the background, configure an Nginx server, and it will configure to use Let's Encrypt certificates for the domain you gave it. And that's what's happening in the top lines there. And everything that's below is basically optional. So if you want a different database than the default, I think that's SQLite. In this case, this person is using Postre, then you, of course, need to configure a little bit more. And there's, I think, about 20,000 options right now in NixOS for a whole lot of modules. So that's one feature that's really nice. And the other one is that you can actually atomically update and roll back your system. Because all the software that you have in NixOS lives in the Nix store. When you update your system, what happens is that NixOS downloads all your new software into the Nix store. And then when it's time to actually do the upgrade, it just switches your environment to the new system. So all the old stuff is still there, right along the new stuff. But all your binaries just point to the new ones when you switched. And that gives you the option that when something is wrong, you can just roll back to the old version. Yes?
How would you prevent garbage collection?
You have to configure how you want to do garbage collection. You can manually do garbage collection, but then your disk will be full at some point. Or you can tell NixOS to do it, that's Nix taking care of, to do it every few days or when your disk goes below a certain threshold. So you can do whatever is whatever you want, your preference. So that's NixOS. And NixOS also lives in this Nix packages repository in a directory called NixOS. So Nix packages and NixOS, they have two releases per year. And the unstable branch is actually a rolling release branch. It's not that unstable. So a lot of people actually run on what's called unstable. But if you want a few more guarantees, you can use the releases. And they usually have 7 months of support. So when a new release comes out, you have about a month to switch to that release, and then the old release will lose support. Short advertising block, my company does long-term support, and then you will have 5 years of support. All right, so this slide has some resources to help you get started. There is zero2nix.com, which is a bit of a tutorial approach. You can look at nix.dev, that has a lot of reference material. There's nixos.org, the Nix homepage. It has a learn section that has all the manuals. There's the package search, I already mentioned that. If you're looking for a wiki that exists as well, there's wiki.nixos.org. Do not use the other one, that's outdated and very poorly maintained. if you want to try out the demos from today yourself, there's the URL as well. You can go to community events. There's a really nice meetup in Dresden, if you're local here. But there's a lot of meetups in Germany and Europe and the world. So if you're from anywhere else, you can also find a meetup local to you. And if you need professional support or long-term support, then you can call Cyberus. And that concludes my talk. Thanks.
Thank you, Florian, for the wonderful session. And if anybody has questions, then I will come with the microphone to Emora.
With the example of Nextcloud, you show some configuration files. Are they documented in the package online, or how can I find which configuration fields are available?
So you can actually go to this option search here, search.nixos.org, and that will have two tabs, one for packages and one for options. And then you can just type Nextcloud in the option search, and it will show you all the options that exist for Nextcloud.
I wanted to ask, because of the dynamic libraries we saw before, will it copy, like, will the build manager copy all of the libraries into the store at this point, or will they still be shared? How is this handled?
So when you build the software, Nix will look whether they already exist in your Nix store. If they don't, it will look in the binary cache whether it can download them. If not, it will build them. And once they're in the Nix store with that hash, then another output that has the same dependency can just reuse that one.
Okay, thank you.
Can I also transfer data while doing a new reproducible system? Like on a flash drive?
So do you mean like user data state, or do you mean more configuration data?
Maybe both.
Maybe both. So state is always an issue. But you can, so everything that you have in your Nix configuration, you can easily apply to your new system. But it's usually not a good idea to put your state in there.
Okay.
But you can, of course, install the new system and then copy the stuff over, but I'm not sure that's what you meant.
Okay, my question would be, if I have a new software that not already has Nix config options available, is there a way to create just a config file and write to it, or how much work is it to implement these options for a new software? For it to be reproducible?
So what you can do is you can package the software. So no module, but just the package, so that you can install it on a NixOS system. And then you can put the config file somewhere in your state directories. So in NixOS, it usually lives in varlib. Then you lose the declarative part of it. But this is an option to just get started.
And how much work would it be to implement this way to be declarative?
That really depends on how many configuration options your software has. In the easiest case, it's just a couple of lines, because in the easiest cases, you just basically put an enable switch there. And then if your configuration, so that if your software uses a configuration language like YAML or JSON or TOML, it's pretty easy because there's helpers there to translate Nix into those languages. But yeah, that's highly dependent on the software.
Yes, I have a question. When do you the experimental feature for flakes, when you does it no market anymore as experimental?
I don't know. So maybe a backstory there. So this, I showed you a flake. There's other versions to, or other options to configure Nix. And flake is kind of still the new thing that has a few benefits. But in the official Nix binary, it's still marked as experimental. And there's a big community debate going on whether it should be experimental still or not. I would usually recommend to use flakes unless you really have good reasons not to. But yeah, the experimental thing, it's, well, not that good.
Can you share some experience on upgrading to newer releases for existing systems? Is it usually smooth, or is there a lot of like headache or troubleshooting?
So I would say it's usually smooth. So for my home lab, it's so I, in the worst case, I've had to put in a couple of hours. But the usual case is it just works.
Yeah, my question is in the similar direction. For example, if you have a server running SSH and there's a new version of OpenSSL, how does the upgrade process look like?
For a single server where you have NixOS installed. So for that, if you're using flakes, you type Nix flake update, and then you type NixOS rebuilds with a flake switch, and then it just does the upgrade.
Do we have any more questions? Okay, I think this would be the last one, and then.
From the Nextcloud example you shared, I saw there was some secrets involved for passwords. How are secrets in configurations handled by Nix?
So Nix itself handles secrets, let's say, not at all. But there is tooling. So there is a thing called SOPSNix and HNix that helps you handle your secrets and put them in your Git. So if you share your configuration on GitHub, you don't want your secret to be in plain text on GitHub. And then SOPSNix and HNix are good helpers.
I thank you, Florian, once again for the wonderful session and answering the questions. And I thank the audience as well. Wish you all the best. And I think this was the last session for today. And I hope to see you next year as well in the Chemnitz Linux Tage. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. So if